I live in Israel. This season is dedicated to the memory of the 1,400 of my countrymen who were massacred on October 7th and the 240 people that were kidnapped and are being held hostage by the terrorist organization Hamas. Hopefully they will be returned to their families as soon as possible, and hopefully this terrible war will be able to come to a peaceful end very soon. Welcome to minute 3 of season 6 of Movie Around Minute, the Daily Podcast, where we take a cap rest journey through the 1946 classic, It's a Wonderful Life, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me today is Jake Lewitt of the Con Air Pod and the Deep Blue Sea Pod. Welcome back, Jay.
Thank you. You can tell I'm talking because I'm flashing. I glow a bit brighter when
okay.
I talk, and then you can
talk
when you
talk. And it all depends on our size. You know, I haven't figured out, you know, the size issue here is very strange also. But we'll get there. We'll figure out. People will understand what we're talking about when we start talking about this minute.
I hope so.
That's right. So minute 3 begins with the camera taking a trip through space and time and ends with Franklin explaining the situation. You know, yesterday we ended things with all the townspeople, or at least the townspeople that we will get to know over the course of the next 2 hours, you know, trying to say nice things about George Bailey and getting God or whatever is out there to, you know, to try and save him from whatever trouble he may be having. We have no idea at this point what type of trouble it is. I mentioned this yesterday. It's a great way to start this movie, but it leaves things really, really strange because we have absolutely no idea what's going on. We just know there's this guy, George Bailey, in trouble. That's it. So, and that's it.
And now,
now we've traveled to space where we see a fake planet or a fake moon with a whole bunch of different dots on the screen in front of us.
That's
yeah.
No moon.
That it is not. And
it's the plastic ball. That's right. The one that's waving in front of the camera.
And as this minute starts, we start to hear, you know, it like we're traveling through space and time from a 1945, 46 perspective, you know, when this was being filmed. So it's a great effect for that time. From today's aspect, things will be so different, you know, if they were doing it this way. Now, what I found very interesting is that apparently this conglomeration of planets and stars is actually based on something called a Stefan's Quintet. Are you familiar with that at all? You being a science person, you know.
I am not.
Okay. Stefan's Quintet is a visual grouping of 5 galaxies, of which 4 form the first compact galaxy group ever discovered. The group is visible in the constellation Pegasus, and it was discovered in 1877 by Edouard Stefan, which is why it's called Stefan's Quintet. And he was at the Marseille Observatory at the time. This group is the most studied of all the compact galaxy groups. And the brightest member of the visual grouping is NGC 7320. You know, I don't know enough about that. Well, you know, we need a space guy to tell us a little bit more about these type of things. But the bottom line is that you know, this is an area in space where they have 5 galaxies, you know, very close to one another, and it is one of the cosmic objects that are being observed by the James Webb Space Telescope, which was launched just a few years ago into space and is able to give us a look at all of these very, very far away galaxies. So I find it really cool that in 1877 this was, you know, discovered, and now, you know, 100 and almost 50 years later, you know, we actually finally have a telescope that can see things even closer. So the question is whether this was done on purpose or not, and I don't know the answer to that. You know, I don't know if this was something that you know, Capra said, hey, you know, 50 years ago, or 70 years ago, there was this guy who, thought of this Stefan's Quintet. Why don't we use that? Or maybe it's just a coincidence. I don't know.
Maybe he just picked a patch of sky that little cluster and that little cluster. Let's have them two talk to each other.
That could be.
And that was all.
He's going through. He's looking through all the. You know, he went to NASA and which didn't exist yet, and looked at all the pictures and said, "Hey, wait a second.
I got a great idea, you guys. You should film some kind of.
Hey, why not? If it works. So basically, as we're going through time and space, we hear again some of the voices that we heard in yesterday's minute. We hear a little girl saying, "Please bring Daddy home. Watch over him tonight." And then we hear again, "Please bring Daddy back." So, it's basically showing that the everything has gone over time and space, and wherever we are here in the universe, where we're watching this Stefan's Quintet, someone is actually hearing all of those pleas or voices, or someone, the stars, exactly.
The stars.
And then we see two of the blobs on the screen. Are more pronounced than the others. And then one of them starts flashing and goes, "Hello, Joseph. Trouble? Looks like we'll have to send someone down. A lot of people are asking for help from a man named George Bailey." Now, do you know the names of these two blobs?
One of them is called Joseph.
That is correct. And what's the other one?
The
other one is called Franklin.
I'm not sure.
Franklin. The other one's Franklin. And so I went on IMDb and I was trying to find out who does the voices for these two things. And again, where did they get the ideas of the names Franklin and Joseph? Do you have any clue?
I'm trying to think.
I have a guess.
To be old names.
I have a guess, but where do you think Franklin would come from?
I mean, there's the only Franklin I can think of. Is the president's.
Okay, I'm going to give you a hint. Think back to Monday.
So that would be my guess. Would be.
Think back to Monday.
Back to Monday. Oh, Frank Capra.
That's what I think. I think that the whole idea here is that
the director of this film. And then Joseph is the writer.
No, the two cinematographers.
The writer was Joseph.
The two cinematographers are named Joseph.
Okay, well, I thought it was a Joe. Wasn't there?
Nope.
Wasn't the additional stuff by Joe?
Okay. You're saying okay.
I'm misremembering that already.
That could be also. You're right. Joe Sterling. I forgot about that one. I was thinking the actual Joseph. Yeah. Okay. So in other words, you're saying this, and it makes sense. This is basically a conversation between Capra and either his head writer or his DPs. It's something I never thought of beforehand.
And the other writer was Francis. Goodrich, that's another kind of Frank.
Right.
They were just talking to each other.
Could be.
This is just the production meeting.
More or less. Yeah, sounds like it. And, I mean, basically, I looked up in IMDb, trying to find out who does the voices of these two characters, and only one of them is listed, and it's listed as uncredited, but only one of them is listed. So that was like the person who voices Joseph, I have absolutely no idea who it is. Because I couldn't find the listing for it. We have what's known as the Senior Angel, which is voiced by someone named Maroni Olson. Okay. Have you ever heard that name before?
No, definitely not. What else are they?
Okay.
Where else are they?
So he,
can they be found?
Okay, so Maroni Olson is basically, first of all, the name means... the guy was a Mormon, right? And his parents named him Moroni because that's the name of the angel who, according to Joseph Smith, the head of the founding of the Mormons, he revealed to Joseph Smith the location of the document which would later become known as the Book of Mormon. Okay, which again, here we have Joseph showing up again. Okay. I don't think that's the Joseph that Frank Capra was referring to here, but there's a lot of coincidences here. Maroni Olson was actually an actor who was in a lot of movies over his career, but the most prominent role that he ever had was just a voice role. Okay, he was the voice of the magic mirror in Snow White and Seven Dwarfs.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yes, right. He has 112 acting credits on IMDb, but you know basically his voice and his facial attributes were used, you know, for the magic mirror in Snow White. So I thought that was very interesting that Capra would go back and take the, you know, mirror, mirror on the wall, who's the fairest of them all, to have that be the person, you know, to be sympathetic to Clarence and, you know, talk about everything that's going on. So back to what...
It's a good voice. Yes,
it is. But again, it's really strange that I couldn't find any connection as to who Joseph was. Who did the voice of Joseph?
We'll never know. Lost to history.
I guess so. I searched for it and couldn't find anything about it. It's had, again, this one for Maroni Olsen was uncredited. I mean, in IMDb, there's probably like 50 people that are uncredited in this movie. But they don't mention anything about any other angels. They're just the senior angel. That's it. So that's interesting.
Yeah.
And then, so Joseph says, looks like we'll have to send someone down. A lot of people are asking for help for a man named George Bailey. And Franklin responds, George Bailey? Yes. Tonight's his crucial night. You're right. We'll have to send someone down immediately. Whose turn is it? That's why I came to see you, sir. It's that clockmaker's turn again. So, first of all, I find it really interesting that they're having the way that they're having this conversation. Like, Frank, I mean, again, we're not going to get into all religious aspects of this movie, but, you know, Franklin is higher up than Joseph, and Franklin is aware of the fact that on December 24th, 1945, George Bailey's going to have a crisis.
The other guy.
And Joseph hasn't been told that yet. You know,
I've been monitoring the situation and we have a problem. And Frank is like, oh yes, we're scheduled to have a problem today.
That's right. I've known for eons that we're going to be having a problem today. And I decided to let you find out on your own.
I do appreciate that this isn't constrained to any particular religion. They talk of angels, which makes you, and it's set at Christmas, which makes you think of kind of Christianity,
right?
I guess. But it's then it's like they are upper angels, as you say, but then they're also flashing celestial bodies. They're like that galactic star clusters flashing in space,
correct.
Which isn't any kind of, you know, I don't think that's in any religious text. And then this guy's a clockmaker.
That's right.
But is also an angel and also a star. So I like the ambiguity, the inconsistency. It's nice.
Maybe it's because it's the religion of Capra. Because the head of the religion of Capra is Franklin.
Sure.
Maybe. I don't know. So he mentions here that it's the clock, that clockmaker's turn. So it shows that Joseph doesn't really, you know, he doesn't appreciate Clarence very much. It's that clockmaker.
So is Clarence, I mean, we'll find out tomorrow, Clarence can't see anything.
Correct.
Which would make it difficult to be a clockmaker, I assume. I'm no disparagement on any blind clockmakers out there, visually impaired.
Correct, but my assumption is that you know, for the last 200 years that he's been in heaven/space, he hasn't really needed to make clocks, but he's still known as that clockmaker.
So this is what I'm trying to get to. Is Clarence someone who was a clockmaker during their life on Earth and since passing has been and become this angel figure who is now known as that clockmaker? Or is that what these angels are? They used to be humans, or are they different things entirely that have always been celestial bodies in space? And one of them has made clocks for some reason, given that I don't think these beings need clocks.
Right. Well, okay. First of all, Franklin and Joseph, I can't talk about their backgrounds, but my assumption is that Clarence passed away 200 years ago, and he was a clockmaker on Earth, and has now been, you know, struggling in heaven/space in order to get his wings and become an angel. Or to become a first class, because he has the IQ of a rabbit. Yes, but so
the faith of a child.
That's right. How far back do you think the occupation of clockmaker goes?
Whoa, I'm going to guess shortly before the invention of clocks. Depends what you mean by clock. Are you counting sundial? They're like a sundial maker. We're talking millennia.
mechanical clocks.
That's going to be like the 1600s, maybe.
It's actually the beginning of the 1300s.
Okay.
They started making mechanical clocks.
That first one took like 300 years.
More or less. And then between the 15th and 17th century, clock making was considered to be the leading edge of technology. That was like the most technologically advanced
science of its day.
Yes, trade that they had.
It's easy. It's not clock making.
That's right.
Bandied around.
Correct, but even someone with the IQ of a rabbit is able to be a clockmaker.
I mean, there must be some pretty smart rabbits out there. I've seen Winnie the Pooh.
Yes. Bugs Bunny.
Sure.
There are many that we can discuss, but we're not here to talk about rabbits, so we'll stay away from those.
I was fully expecting the question, Jay, do you know what the IQ of a rabbit is? And I was like, no, Rob, no, I don't.
We're not there yet. We didn't get there yet. I do have that question down here, Jay. but we're not there yet. So then Franklin laughs and goes, oh, Clarence hasn't got his wings yet, has he? Now, wouldn't Franklin already know that?
Yeah, but they're just discussing, they're gossiping about
That's
it.
That's right.
They both know.
That's right. And then Joseph says, we've passed him up right along. Now, how do you interpret that statement? We've passed him up right along. Does that mean, you know, we just let him go through the motions? Pass him up.
I'm gonna take it as, I take pass him up as being, he's been like passed over.
Correct. It could be.
Not he hasn't had his wing. He's tried to get them and failed.
Right.
A few times. So we keep like pass over him. Kind of getting his wings, and now it's another chance. And this time, who knows? Maybe he'll do it.
Correct. Okay.
We'll see.
No, but I get the impression from Joseph, meaning that we don't want him to pass it. So you know, we're keeping him where he is. You know, and then because then he continues by saying, you know, we passed him up right along because you know, sir, he's got the IQ of a rabbit.
Faith of a child. Yes, they do say that.
Yeah. So.
Just me.
So Jay, what do you think the IQ of a rabbit? No, I'm just kidding. I did look that up.
35.
I did look that up, but I couldn't get an answer because you can't really do an IQ test on animals. But they claim that there's always been a rumor that rabbits were less intelligent than most other domesticated animals. But the recent studies have shown that rabbits have similar IQ intelligence levels of dogs and cats. So, you know, I don't know how much of a, you know, disparage this is by saying he has an IQ of a rabbit, meaning he's, you know, he's just as good as any other domesticated animal. So, I don't know.
I would like someone listening out there to write some research and write some kind of blog post on rabbits in Jimmy Stewart films.
That's right.
Because it's mentioned here, it's mentioned later in this film about the two dollar bills mating like rabbits. And then
Harvey.
Harvey. That's right. And there must be other rabbits in other Jimmy Stewart films, and I want to know which ones and why.
Okay. Good luck with that to whoever decides to take on Jay's challenge. How many different breeds of rabbits do you think there are in the world?
Oh, at least one. It's like there's Lock, there's Mini Lock, there's those giant ones that are the size of
people.
Buses. yeah, small, very small buses. There's the one from Monty Python. 20?
305.
That was my next guess. Okay. Yeah, that's a lot.
And how many continents can you find rabbits on?
Six.
That is correct. And which is the one that doesn't have any?
I've never heard of the Antarctic rabbit. So I'm going to guess that one.
That's right.
There. That was the best place to hide from the Arctic fox with the Antarctic rabbit.
Yes. Yes. So, and it has a very interesting tagline here where it says, the rabbit in many areas of the world is a part of daily life as food, clothing, a companion, and a source of artistic inspiration.
Yep, agreed. Can't disagree with that. Yeah, yeah.
What is a male rabbit called?
We used to have one that was called Copper.
Not his name.
I don't know.
A male rabbit is called a buck. Female rabbit is called a doe.
Ours was called Goldie, but yes.
You have a rabbit?
We did. Oh, we had two.
Uh-huh. Okay.
They were my first pets.
Okay. That's fair. And then we get Franklin's response that you've mentioned numerous times already this episode. Yes, but he's got the faith of a child. Simple. Joseph, send for Clarence. And I love how within 2 seconds, you know, a little dot appears. We don't see anyone call out. We don't have Joseph say, you know, Clarence, AS2 to Franklin's office immediately, or anything to that effect. You know, and then he
appears as like a shooting star, moving at an incredible speed.
That's right.
The kind of speed that you might think someone going at that speed would kind of yell out a lot, which maybe they're doing, but it's space, so no one
can hear you scream. That's right. Okay, that's fair. I understand. It's harder to hear people screaming. So Clarence then shows up and says, "You sent for me, sir?" "Yes, Clarence. A man down on Earth needs our help." "Splendid. Is he sick?" "No, worse."
Hang on. "Splendid. A man on Earth needs our help." "Splendid." Immediate villain.
No. He's not saying in the villainous way. He wants to get his wings. He wants to help someone. But also, he has the IQ of a rabbit. So maybe he thinks of it in a different perspective.
Yeah, if he's thinking of it from the perspective of, "This is how I get my wings. Wonderful. Splendid." Then yes, I'll grant that. But it's pitched as, "There's a man who needs our help. Splendid." Oh, it would be better if he didn't need our help. But okay.
Oh, there's someone with a problem? Oh, that's great.
Marvelous. Let's go. It's sinister.
Yes. It sounds very, very sinister. So, in other words, you're saying Clarence is the villain here?
I'm not pitching that. No, I don't think he is.
Wouldn't it be really interesting if Clarence was actually Potter's guardian angel?
Okay, so Clarence, his mission is he stops George from killing himself. How would that benefit Potter? Because then he'd actually, as you pitched yesterday, he would go to prison.
That's right.
And Potter wants to see George go to prison and his family ruined. Like if George dies and his family gets the life insurance, possibly. Unless there's a suicide clause, which they tend to have. So this way, they can get the money and they're destitute on the streets. Yes, Clarence is the villain. He's Potter's guardian angel. There, we did it.
All right, cool.
It's a terrible film.
It's not a wonderful life. It's a terrible life. You never know. Sometimes I wouldn't be surprised if someone actually would pitch that idea at some point, you know, in time to make a movie that way. Don't know.
Someone's going to have recut the trailer to be it's a horror film.
That's right.
This is the kind of film they do that with.
That's true. So, but what's interesting is why does Clarence automatically, why is his first thought that if someone needs help, he's sick? I'm not even looking at this from a, you know, from a malicious aspect, but why is that the first thing that comes to mind that someone's sick if they need help?
If this isn't Clarence's first adventure, maybe the previous ones he's had to deal with have been people who are ill.
Okay.
Or they haven't been, and he has this obsession with sick people, and he's like, "Is this one sick? Do I finally get a sick one?"
Could be.
So either this is all he's dealt with, or he's just been dying to deal with a sick person. Is there phlegm? Tell me it's phlegm. I just want to see phlegm.
It could be. And Franklin's response is, "No, worse. He's discouraged." At exactly 10:45 p.m. Earth time, that man will be thinking, and then the minute gets cut off. But let's backtrack a tiny little bit. What the hell is Earth time?
That is a very good point that I did not think about.
At 10:45 p.m. Earth time.
time. Well, okay, this is a simple misunderstanding. If he's in upstate New York, then he's on ES2.
That's right.
So they just misunderstood what the E and ESD stands for.
Ah, okay.
Which is Earth, it's Earth Standard Time, 10:45 p.m.
But you think that if Franklin is all-knowing and is aware of the fact and has known for eons that this day will come, so, you know, wouldn't he have been able to realize that we're dealing with, you know, Eastern Standard Time as opposed to Earth Standard Time?
Maybe there's 24 different commanding angels, each for a different time zone on the Earth.
Oh, okay.
And Franklin,
that's fair.
They don't talk to each other. Franklin only knows that band of the planet that is Earth time, that is EST.
Okay, all right, I'll buy that.
It's like sometimes that these kind of, when you get daylight savings coming in, it messes everything up.
That's right, but back then they didn't really need to worry about daylight savings because I think it only began in like the 50s. So.
And they don't understand it in space because it's like, what's daylight? We're in space. So it means nothing. But yeah, so Earth Standard Time is the only band of the planet he knows.
Okay.
And I'm saying he. This is a star.
Well, his name is Franklin.
I've misgendered.
If the
band of life they know.
If the star is called Franklin, my assumption is it's male. I could be wrong.
I am. Yes, I'm not happy to make that assumption.
Okay. I'm going to stick with that. I'm fine making that assumption. Okay. And so we talked about earlier that we were trying to figure out earlier this week about what time this was. So
10:45 p.m.
No. That's at 10:45 right. Is when he wants to commit suicide. And yeah. We're going to find out tomorrow that that's only an hour from now.
9:45 p.m.
So it's right now about 9:45 Earth time.
Okay. Yeah.
So everyone is praying an hour beforehand. So that's why it all depends on how long, you know, George was wandering around town, how long he was at Martini's, how long it took him to get from Martini's to hit the tree, how long it took him to get from the tree to the bridge, and how long he contemplated on the bridge what he should do. So that gives it does give enough time for the gossip mill to work around that something's wrong with George.
Yes, the hive mind can activate.
That's right. So, you have anything else you want to say about this minute?
No, I just it's fun. Like, you know, the first weeks of films we normally talk about, it's generally like one location or like is the airport, is our Die Hard. It's rare that we're like, okay, you get the credits and then space. And where we are at the end of this week, it's very changeable, and I like it.
Yeah, and we're going to go other places also, so, you know, there we go.
Yeah.
That works really well. Okay, so every Wednesday we have a new segment, which is called It's a Wonderful Wednesday. Now, anyone who is familiar with this movie knows that the idea and premise and trope of it all has been used tens, if not hundreds of times in the 76 years since this movie came out, in order to show us what the life of certain characters of different movies or TV shows, how their lives would be different, you know, if either they weren't born or something else happened, something changed in their life or something like that. So every week I'm going to bring an example of that. So what better place to start, especially with Jay, is with The Simpsons. Okay. Are you a Simpsons fan, Jay?
I used to be. Okay. I haven't seen it in a long time.
Yeah, I'm the same way. I haven't seen it.
But I used to enjoy the show. Yeah.
But so the episode of The Simpsons that deals with the plot of It's a Wonderful Life was the 90th episode of the series. Came out in season 5. It was episode 9. And it's called The Last Temptation of Homer. Okay, so I sat and I watched that episode. I don't remember if I've ever seen it before. I might have seen bits and pieces of it. Basically, what happens is in a nutshell, a new woman starts working at the plant, and Homer starts to fall in love with her. Her name is Mindy, and he keeps thinking that okay, he's gonna leave his wife, and he wants to spend time he wants to be with this woman named Mindy. And so he keeps thinking about the fact of how his life would be different if he was married to this woman named Mindy instead of Marge. So an angel appears to him, and the angel is in the guise of Isaac Newton, and he basically says to Homer, "I decided I'm going to use a form that you'll recognize." And then Homer goes, "Isaac, who?" So then they change the form, and it turns him into Colonel Klink from Hogan's Heroes. Are you familiar with Hogan's Heroes at all?
Only through talking to you.
Okay.
Yeah, it's come up, but I've never seen it.
Okay. So it's Hogan's Heroes is a TV show that came out in the 60s with Bob Crane and Werner Klemperer as Colonel Klink. And the whole idea is that it's based on movies like Solic 17 and The Great Escape, which obviously I covered The Great Escape here in the first season, where, you know, it's U.S. prisoner or Allied prisoners in a POW camp during World War II and all the different things that they do in order to help others escape and cause havoc to the commandant, you know, Colonel Klink. So the whole idea here is that, you know, Homer is now seeing Colonel Klink as his guide through what his life would be like if he was married to Mindy instead of married to Marge. And the whole time he keeps...
I see.
What's hilarious is that the entire time he keeps making Hogan's Heroes remarks to Colonel Klink. Did you know that they hid they had a phone hidden, you know, under this bed? Do you know that they had, you know, like all the different things that they hid in the, you know, in the show from Colonel Klink, and the, you know, the aperture of Colonel Klink keeps saying, "No, I didn't know that. I didn't know that." And, you know, he takes Homer on a very short journey, showing him what his life would be like. And he shows that he would be living in like this mansion if he was married to Mindy. And he's like, "Hey, that can't be so bad." And then he says, "Okay, but I'm going to show you what's going on with Marge." And turns out that Marge is actually living in the White House. And therefore, Homer realizes that maybe he would rather be married to Marge, but he's not really sure yet. And then he and Mindy are in a motel room, and he's debating whether to cheat on Marge with her or not. And he realizes that there's something wrong between their connection. It's just not, it doesn't work as well. And then we see that, you know, they have a talk, and Homer confesses that he, you know, he's not really sure if he wants to cheat on Marge or not. And then Mindy tells him that it's okay, and he falls asleep. And then we see Marge show up at the hotel, and Homer sings a song to Marge. And while they're in the motel room, they decide that, you know, they're about to turn out the lights. And then Marge finds some food on the ground. I think it's like a turkey, something like that. And, you know, Homer realizes that, yes, he's with the right person. He's with the person who knows him the best and loves him the most. And then, like, the lights go out. So I mean, it's a simple way to do it, but I think it's a fun way that The Simpsons would do something like this. You know, just showing Homer, who probably also has the IQ of a rabbit, to you know, to see how he really understands that, you know, there's a reason why he's married to Marge, and why he loves Marge, and why she loves him.
I remember that episode, but none of the It's Wonderful Life stuff. But I remember that him going to have the affair with Mindy and the hotel room, and they're like kissing, and then there's a vacuum cleaner outside the door that sounds like Marge, and his shirt busts open, and he's got this t-shirt with her face on it. So like, there are some bits of the episode I do remember, but none of the imagining the alternate life with Mindy instead of Marge
stuff. Right. Okay. I mean, it's very brief. They don't spend a lot of time on it, but it's still okay. Effective. You know, I like the way they did it. This isn't one of the best versions of It's a Wonderful Life, you know, that of, you know, used in TV shows over the years. But you know, we have 26 weeks to get through a whole bunch of them. So we will see which are the better ones. And yeah. So Jay, you want to once again tell people where they can find Jay Quillett?
Deep Blue Sea, the podcast where we're talking about Deep Blue Sea adjacent films. So not this one. Other films that are aquatic or sharks or Rennie Harlan related. Deep Blue Sea Pod, everywhere you can find podcasts.
All right. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Move Around Minute. You can find me on X. You can find me on my website, movearoundminute.com. And you can find me on Facebook. So until tomorrow, hot dog.
Hot dog.
I love you truly, truly dear. Life with its sorrow, life with its tears.